I wish I could answer that. The simple answer, I can answer the second part, why is it not expounded? There's no mystery there. The reason why this is not expounded, or the reasons why it's not expounded, are these. Number one, the replacement of the old Calvinistic evangelism with Finneyism. Finney openly repudiated the doctrine of the imputed righteousness of Christ. And since Finney had supposedly great success in evangelism, most of which was as permanent as the vapor that you blow out in a cold morning, but since he appeared to have great success, he has swept through evangelicalism generally, and fundamentalism particularly, so that today you have everybody from fundamentalists to the charismatics claiming Finney in their spiritual ancestry. That's the first area. The second was the rise and dominance of dispensationalism. Dispensationalism, again, officially repudiates the doctrine of the imputed righteousness of Christ. They believe in imputation. And this is where perhaps it'll help us to draw some line, or at least maybe not to draw it as harshly as we otherwise would. They believe in imputation. They misunderstand the statement, your faith is counted for righteousness. And they have the idea, some of them, at least historically, have the idea that God looks on your faith as if it were perfect righteousness. It's a form of dispensational transubstantiation. And of course that's not true. God does not play mind games and say, your faith is perfect righteousness, or I'm going to treat it as such. That's not what it's all about. It doesn't measure up with Romans 5:17 through 18, where it's the obedience of Christ that is imputed to us. But those are the two reasons why it's not preached, because those are the two dominant evangelistic theories. Well, one's an evangelistic theory, the other's a theological theory, that have taken possession of fundamental churches. Where do we draw the line? I think that there are many people who just don't understand. Their heart is right. And I have to keep reminding myself, there are many men who are better than their stated theology. When Paul wrote this, he was deliberately writing to people, or should I say, he was writing to people who were deliberately setting aside salvation by grace alone as not good enough, and they were deliberately adding works righteousness. Now, even the dispensationalists that I criticized would not do that. Although effectively, especially in dealing with their eschatology, their doctrine of last things, they end up at times appearing to preach salvation by works, sometimes in the Old Testament, sometimes in the Kingdom Age, or the Tribulation period, particularly. Well, when you stop and ask them, they say, no, we don't believe in salvation by works. Now, they're inconsistent. And I think it's a golden rule in controversy, if you can possibly live by it, don't take what you see as the logical extension of your opponent's position and foist it upon him and then berate him for holding it, because very often he's not consistent and doesn't see it that way. So you're blaming him for a position he says he doesn't hold. Dispensationalists now would say they believe in salvation by grace alone. And therefore, I don't think they come under this. I would draw the line where they would hold that. But having said that, I am worried about the lack of preaching of justification by grace through faith in the merits of Christ. I am very worried about that. And I think you see the results of it in the churches of America and indeed of Britain and Ulster today. You see the results of it. You see an evangelism that leaves 95%, perhaps according to some thoughts, some 95% of the converts still unsaved. That is something radically wrong there. You see churches built sometimes to multiply thousands of members, and the very pastors of those churches would say, even those whom I've received into membership, maybe 85-90% of them I have no expectation of ever seeing in heaven. That is serious. And perhaps in some ways worse. And here I'd have to let Brad come and give his own testimony. What you have, something along the line of what you were talking. We have people who have come to this church from many other church backgrounds, and they've been saved for years, and say, I never knew the gospel. I came to Christ and I believe I was saved, but the gospel as the whole story and how it impacts my life, I never knew. Now, you younger folk, this is something you need to take notice of, because you have a chance, if you take it seriously and use it, you have a chance to learn the gospel while you're young and learn that salvation is not just a decision. Oh, it involves that decision and many more decisions to what you're going to do for God. But salvation is not just a decision that I look back and when I was 13 I walked the aisle or I prayed a prayer, I came to Christ. And salvation is an ongoing experience of the power of God's grace in your life. And if you can come to know how what we call the objective truths of the gospel, that means the truths concerning the person and work of Christ and your position in Christ and your acceptance with God because of Christ, things that happened outside of you that have nothing to do with how you felt, feel, or ever will feel. They happened outside of you. How those things set you free to live life to the full, to live by faith. You've heard me say it many times, what it is to live by faith. It's to take what you believe concerning Christ and the gospel and let that govern how you live. That's living by faith. There's no big mystery to it. If you can learn that when you're young, you will save yourself an awful lot of trouble. I have spent many hours trying to undo the years of guilt that people have lived under, sometimes with more success than others. But you see people, and I've seen people brought to the edge of suicide just with oppressive guilt. They never learned what it was to live in the light of their justification. Tell you one story before I close to illustrate that. I was dealing some years ago with a person who was seeking to starve herself to death. It was very serious. There was no answer. The doctors could get no answer. Christian counselors could get no answer. And when I was asked to go along to the hospital, I want to tell you, it was not easy. I never forget those days. It was terrible. Was really terrible. What could I do? I preached the gospel. I expounded justification and more justification. What it is to be forgiven. What it is to be accepted. What it is to be in Christ. It all seemed to be wasted. Till one day I got a telephone call. Can I come and see you? My office used to be in here at that time. And said, sure, come along. And again, but over the same gospel story. Now you've heard the statement about the lights in the Second World War. The lights went out all over Europe. It was a blackout because they kept the lights on. They had no smart bombs in those days. The planes at night could see where the cities were and drop their bombs. So the lights went out all over Europe. That was the beginning of the Second World War. When the war was over, what happened? The lights went on all over Europe. Well, the lights were off here. And as I explained this, suddenly, she looked at me, and it was just like something in the dark and a shade or a blind being lifted. And as it was lifted, you could just see the light and the glow. She said, are you telling me? And she began to give me the gospel. I said, that's exactly what I'm telling you. I've been telling you that for months now. That's all I have to tell you. Needless to say, there was no suicide. That changed a life. Now that's an extreme case. I've dealt with other people who have lived in the guilt of something that happened 10, 20, 30 years ago. They couldn't get over it. If only I could go back and... You can't go back and redo that. Now, here's a wee word of advice for you kids. Realize that godly wisdom calls you not to get involved today in things that you know in your heart you're going to regret 10, 20 years from now. But I have dealt with those people. Say, okay, what do you do with your sin? You bring it to the cross. You get washed in the blood. But how can I overcome the memory? How can I overcome the guilt? How can I overcome this and that and the other? Well, how do you overcome it? Have a look at what you are in Christ. See what God says about you in Christ. See what it is to be clothed with the righteousness of Christ. See what it is for God to say, I look on you as being as righteous and acceptable to me as Christ is, because he is your righteousness. See how that sets you free from all that. You learn that when you're young, and you'll save yourself an awful lot of misery. What's more, you'll be free to serve the Lord, and you can go out there and God will use you in a way that you never could never have dreamed of, because as the question implied, even preachers don't grasp this. They're not preaching it. And when people see it and hear it from you, they'll be greatly blessed.